Welcome. This is Bringing the Darkness to the Light. My guests tonight are Spencer Drait and Judith Celebes. They are both creative designers. They have the honor of being listed in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. They have designed many beautiful albums that have been successfully entered into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame. I've interviewed them in the past, and they're amazing guests. They have incredible stories about the music business and about a lot of the artists that they've worked with, you know, throughout the years. So I welcome you both. Hello, Spencer. Hello, Judith. Thank you so much for taking the time.
Thank you for having us on.
It's a pleasure.
Thank you so much. I know that it's so interesting because every time I speak with both of you, I learn something new about your career or about a story of an artist. One of the famous stories that I've heard you both talk about is about how you designed for John Bon Jovi when he first started out as a young man. So we might want to kind of start the show with that, see if we have any people calling in, you know, to the show. But if you want to start telling us about meeting John Bon Jovi.
Spencer, you want to go for that?
Okay. It starts with an entertainment lawyer named Arthur Mann. And Arthur had signed Cinderella and Bon Jovi to Polygram. And he gave me a call and he asked if me and Judith could design for John Bon Jovi's first album, which was called Bon Jovi. And it was interesting because he asked me, Spencer, what do you think of the name of Bon Jovi? And I said, well, it's like Van Halen. And the ironic thing is John really was into Van Halen. After he got the stylist of the Van Halen, he'd come into the studio and say, hey, Spence, you see the Junk video? You know what I mean? He was really into Van Halen. This is very ironic. Anyway, that's how it starts. And Judith and I, he would come to the office. Judith can tell you the story about that, coming to the office. And my major blunder where... Judith, tell him about the tape. You know, the runaway.
We were given the job of designing for John, and of course he wasn't not too many people knew of John and who he was. He played a lot in New Jersey, but he wasn't very well known. So we got, you know, the first album cover, we got the job. John was so involved in, this was his first album, so he was personally super involved in the project. So he would come to Spencer and I at my studio pretty much every day or every other day, just to sit in our studio as Spencer and I worked on the project. But before we even got to started on the design aspect, John, we always wanted to hear the music of whoever the musician was that we were designing for. We just, you know, it just helped us in the process. So one day, John comes in to our studio with a cassette, and Spencer puts the cassette on, and it's his, I think it was going to be his single, correct, Spencer?
Yeah.
Am I correct on that?
Yeah,
that was going to be. And it was Runaway, and so the three of us are sitting there listening to the, you know, Spencer, I, and John, listening to Runaway on the cassette, and then it finished, and, you know, we thank John, and, you know, I, you know, say our goodbyes, and John leaves the studio, and then I turn to Spencer, how did that go? I said to Spencer, God.
He's going to sell a million, and I said, yeah, right.
Yeah, he's going to sell a million. But it was, yeah. And on top of that, you know, not only did we get to design that first album cover for John Bon Jovi, but I got to, believe it or not, my first and only, I was their stylist. So I styled them for the cover, which was pretty awesome. and like Spencer said, he loved Van Halen, and he wanted that Van Halen style, which he got. on that first cover.
Yeah, that is so interesting. And I know, I think Judith, you had told me that the, even down to the diamond between Bon and Jovi was part of
your creation. Yeah, that was our design. We did that logo for him.
Wow, yeah. That's incredible. Yeah. You know, we have a caller on line three. We have Monty Melnick on line three.
Oh,
oh yay.
Yay.
Well, hello.
Welcome,
there.
Monty.
Hey, Monty. How are you,
hey,
Monty?
Hello, let's go. I figured I'd call in and say hello to you guys. Hello, Spencer, yeah. Judith, Kathy, and everybody.
Well, Monty's like, he's like the other Ramon in our life, I guess, and he's the guy who wrote this fabulous book I want to plug called On the Road with the Ramones, and the updated version is a book to get. It's wonderful. It's the whole, I don't know, the Ramones thing, the travels, the interviews with so many people in the book. It's a great book. But
Thank you, Spencer. Of course, you both have some great books out. One of them, my favorite, is 545s.
Yeah, that's a
And, of course, you've been involved with the Ramones,
Ramones
designing
there.
Road to Ruin and End of the Century.
Yeah, and, you know, I designed Road to Ruin with John Holmstrom and End of the Century with the famous Mick Rock front cover, the T-shirt shot, right? So, it's really interesting, Monty. I mean, they were like, I was on Marky Ramone's show on Sirius, and he told me that the Ramones really liked my work. And, you know, Monty, I didn't know that. I really didn't know that. You know, I just went in blind. Nothing happened. Everything was right, you know. But, Monty, I didn't know that. But they were like a wonderful group, and I didn't know at the time they were going to be so incredible, right, Monty? I mean, they had a rough start, didn't they? I mean, Warner Brothers didn't understand them, right? Right, Monty?
A lot of people in the beginning didn't understand them, you know. That was a problem in the beginning. People just didn't understand what they did, especially when they were opening up for, in the early years, opening up for large groups. The audiences just couldn't understand what was going on for them opening up like Black Sabbath or Toto and groups like that. So it was rough in the beginning.
Yeah.
But you did a great job on those albums, Spencer.
Oh, thank you. Sure. Thank you so much. Yeah, they mean a lot to me. I mean, they were wonderful covers. They turned out to be really well-designed covers, I must say. And John Holmstrom's artwork on Road to Ruin, classic. You know, Monty, I mean, that's like, that went through a lot, too. It went through different people,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, I was happy to have him. He designed the cover of my book, by the way. John Holmes.
That's right. He did. John is a great illustrator, and we had him in our Judith, we had him on a creating comic book. I think we had.
Oh, I know. Yes, we did.
You know, he's like a punk magazine, right, Monty? The punk.
Absolutely.
Magazine.
I just saw a guy last night.
What?
I just bumped into him last night.
You did? Oh, wow! Cool. Yeah, great. Yeah, John's a wonderful person, and our Ramones poster. Road to Ruin posters in the MoMA permanent collection, which is quite a thing.
You also have a great radio show, that Indie Cafe, too. That's what it's called, right? The program you got?
Indie Cafe, yeah, we got two shows that Judith and I co-host, Indie Cafe 2, and now it's Interviews Down Under. And a lot of those interviews, we call it the Music Legends series, is going into the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame archival collection, and one of those interviews is with Monty Melnick, which is going into the archives.
Is that that for the Indie Cafe 2 show or the other one?
I don't know. It's funny. I forgot which one it is, but it's a good one. Whatever it is, you've always given.
I think Monty was the Indie Cafe too.
Yeah, I think it's Indie Cafe. You're right.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are great shows, by the way, Spence.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, Judith and I really.
It's anybody that's involved or had anything to do in any way, shape, or form with the Rock Hall of Fame. You know, we
How do people access that and listen to it?
Archives.
Yeah, you mean the art? Well, the interviews, the ones that we're putting in now, which is about 32 of them. Two are in already, our tribute to Seabrook Stein interview, which you were on, by the way. And then the Sylvia Reed interview, those are in already, but we have 32 interviews between the two shows, interviews done under Indie Cafe 2 between the two shows, going in September. So they're not in yet, but they'll be in by September to, I don't know, October. You know what I mean? They'll be in there. Actually be in there in September. And so you're in there. I mean, Holmstrom's in there too. You know, Holmstrom's in there too. But there's a lot. I mean, Lenny Kaye, some music doc films. We're getting the Joan Jett Bad Reputation movies going in. The we just finished
Mick Rock,
Shot, this movie Shot, which is, that's, well, we just finished that one. It's a great interview.
And it's a phenomenal movie. Of course,
that film, he shows the Ramones cover, End of the Century, Monty, you know, in the movie.
If you haven't seen that documentary, you should try it. I'm not sure how one, whether it's streaming or not, but if you can get your hands on it and see this, it's
Monty, you
got to
see that, because he talks about the Ramones on the End of the Century cover, you know, on there a little bit. You know, he covers everybody.
It's an award-winning, I think it's an award-winning documentary.
Yeah, you know, you're right, Judith. I mean, Mick shot for like at least 15 Rock Hall inductees, you know. So that's quite a trip, you know. Queen and Lou Reed and blah, 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 and go down the list, you know. But Ramon.
Well, I don't take up too much of your time. By the way, Catherine.
Thanks a lot, Monty, for calling.
You should go listen to that when they get a chance, too.
And buy the book. Buy Monty's book, everybody. Buy that On the Road to the On the Road with the Ramones book by Monty Melnick.
Monty, I actually have a question for you. We have a big audience that's probably going to be listening to the show, if not on the replay. What is your experience when you were working with Ramones and coming up with ideas for their cover art, for their albums, or what kind of an impact did the individual members have, you know? Because that's really what the fans, we have a lot of Ramones fans out there. Which one of the members was more involved in what the cover art would be look like or what the album would have a scene or?
Well, Johnny and Joey, basically, they were the main factors in picking things out and coming up with stuff. Johnny specifically would come up with an idea, and a lot of the covers that were shot by great George DeBose, he would just throw some ideas out at George, and George would come up with the ideas for the covers. Roberta Bailey's shot was originally going to be a punk magazine shot, and that the Ramones wouldn't liked it so much they took it over for the cover, and that became the iconic cover shot of all time, I think, you know.
Danny Seals picked
the second one. He shot the next one. And the rest of them, you know, John and Joey had a lot to do with it.
Let me ask you a question, Monty.
About the Road to Ramone cover.
Wasn't that controversial to the Ramones with cartoon? Wasn't there a thing about that, having a cartoon on the front cover?
Well, somebody came up with that idea, and at that time, Tommy had left the group. But Tommy was in that cartoon somebody came up with. And it had a bunch of like crazy stuff like lobster claws and snakes coming out of it. They didn't like that.
Yeah.
They brought it to John Holmstrom, who you know put Marky back in on the drums and fixed up into a normal thing, not lobsters and snakes coming out of camps and stuff like that.
Yeah,
Catherine, you're saying something?
Yeah, I actually had a question because you and I have spoken before about the Ramones. One of the covers, and I think it might be The Road to Ruin, the guys were in T-shirts, and I know there was some conversation about how everybody remembered seeing the guys in leather jackets.
Right, so right, the end of the century. That's
there's a whole story behind that, right?
Yeah, that's, by the way, that's the End of the Century album cover.
Yes.
And that I could talk about that because, well, Monty knows anyway. I mean, there was a controversy. They wanted to they wanted a commercial look, and so Mick shot them in T-shirts, and then a leather jacket. So I got photographs of both of them. I got the leather jacket shoot, and I got the T-shirt shoot. But Monty, wasn't it they wanted more of a commercial look? Isn't that the story with that?
What the record company came up with, and Mick Rock had that idea with that, too, also.
Yeah.
And they didn't like it. That's the only cover ever that they're on with without their leather jackets. They said, "Well, we're not up with the leather jackets. It's not good. You know what I mean? It's not our look." But the record company and everybody else pushed it through. So they used it that way. You know.
That's well, I got to add to that. I got to add to that because I know something. Marky told me on the show. I converted the leather jacket shot into a high contrast polarization, so it's just black. And I put it on a yellow background on the inner sleeve of the album. So Marky told me that on the Sirius show when I was interviewed, he told me that they love that thing I did on the inner sleeve, the high posterization of that. So that was used on the, and you know this, it was used on the 45s overseas, that version of
that. Well,
if
it's up to them, they would probably have used that for the cover, you know, but
they were
overruled.
Yeah, that's what I heard. Right. That's interesting, that story. Yeah.
Okay, guys, I just took off for your time. It's a pleasure talking to you.
Yeah.
Hey, I love you, man.
Thank you so much. Thanks for calling in, Monty.
Take care,
okay,
bro.
Everybody out there, gabba gabba hey.
Right.
Wow, it's great. You know, it's so great to actually speak to somebody that was, you know, involved with the Ramones and has the experience of their stories. And you know, there's another album cover that you know, I often speak to about, and that's the Joan Jett. She's got that jump poster. A lot of people recognize that poster,
right? You know, with the yellow background.
Yeah, the yellow background. So can you talk, because I know a lot of people remember that it started as a poster, I think, and then it became an album cover.
Well, the photograph. But Judith and I went to the office. Meryl Laguna was sitting in a chair, and I remember she showed us the shot on by Dieter Zill, a jump shot on a yellow background. And I said, no type at all on the front cover. I went over to Kenny Laguna, and Kenny, the only thing he said to me, put the Mick Rock shot, which he did of the group, a great shot that Mick did, put that into the album. That's the other thing I remember. And which we did on the inner panel, a big color shot of the group, which is used on the 45, by the way, the first 45, Fake Friends 45. But anyway, that's how it starts. And so they told us to use a lot of the photographs, which Judith could tell you about. I mean, we went, and what I did was, or what we did was, play the color with black and white. So you open it up, and you're not just getting a bunch of color, you're getting black and white, surrounded a big Mick Rock color photograph. On the other panel, you're getting a lot of shots overseas, you know, the tour shots. And then the back cover is the same play with black and white and color. Big black and white shot in the middle by Robert Ellis, I believe. And then color shots left and right of the shot. So it's a nice balance visually, and it's very interesting in concept of the design. But
Sorry to interrupt you. I just wanted to say that the interior, you know, I mean, the design of it with all those photographs, we were, you know, the managers must have given us about 200 photographs.
Right.
You know, I mean, it was like, it was really quite an ordeal trying to, and they gave us the responsibility. I mean, we were allowed to pick whatever we wanted. We picked the photographs that went on the interior of that album.
Yeah, the inner panel, when you open it up, the jump shot's so historic, and the poster's really nice, too.
Yeah,
the poster is really great. And you open it up, and the inner left panel with the color Mick Rock shot of the group is gorgeous. And then it's surrounded.
Yeah.
This is what's interesting. It's surrounded by color shots. I put color shots of from the tour. So you're getting live color shots live black and white shots surrounding color shot. And the top black and white is heavy. It's a picture of Joan on stage with the band and a huge crowd because it was the Queen concert. She opened up for Queen. And that photograph is on the top of Mick Rock. Elongated shot on the top. Beautiful shot. I mean, it's a really incredible shot. And then on the right inner panel are all these photographs that Judith and I chose for, you know, for, of the tour that they gave us. And then the back panel has the live shots again surrounding a huge black and white vertical shot. It's gorgeous. They're in the trailer. It's a trailer shot by Robert Ellis. Beautiful shot.
Personally, so, I think it's probably her best album cover.
Yeah, that's what I said. You know, it's one of the best rock album covers, especially the front cover alone. The shot with no type on it has got to be one of the greatest rock and roll covers ever. Just what it is. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
Right, Judith? You know, it's just what it is.
Yeah, I love that cover for so many reasons. But then I also love we did Glorious Results.
Right.
And that's, cover. That's, I don't know if you, Kathy, if you know that cover.
Yeah, so Glorious Results is in, actually, that cover is in a movie that we're interviewing that filmmaker, Kevin Kerslake, next month, because he did an amazing film, Bio of Joan, called Bad Reputation. And that cover is in that film. But the cover is interesting. Brian Ellis shot Joan in color, and we have type on it. And the back cover is really interesting. I was in Kenny's office, and I saw this photograph by Chris Callis. And it's them next to a racing car. And it's kind of like a very raw photograph. It's like it's in color, but it's more like a black with a green
with
tint
a brownish
on it.
Tint. It's like an
brownish
old
or greenish
tint,
actually. And so that's a very raw. And right away, I picked up the picture. And I told Kenny that's a back cover. You know, it was like lying on his table. I remember in the office, and I said that's the back cover. So that's a beautiful cover too. And Brian Aries did the front cover, and Jeffrey Thomas did color tinting on the photograph. That's, you should know that. So that's a beautiful cover, by the way. Glorious Results. I agree with you, Drew. That's a really nice cover.
Yeah.
You know, and Mero Laguna would give us the front cover visuals all the time. You know, she gave us Brian Aries' photograph. She gave us the Dieter Zill photograph for the jump shot. You know, she was really a classic, almost like an art director. I'm sure they all agreed on it, Kenny and her and Joan especially, you know, what was going to be the front cover. It was like a combination of people, and we designed it, but everybody's involved in that cover. Joan is definitely involved. Meryl is, Kenny is, and we were. You know, it's like a group thing, you know, in a sense, but we design it, you know what I'm saying? But there's a lot of people in the thing. But her covers were pretty cool. You know, but those two are really stand out, and I agree with you. Those two stand out in our mind.
Yeah. So Spencer, I'm gonna give out the live call-in show number. If anyone out there wants to call in and ask a question to Spencer Drayton and Judith Celibes, the number is 888-627-6008, or you can dial 323-744-4831. And if you call in, we'll be able to take your question. You know, another story that I wanted to bring up that a lot of people may or may not know is that both of you did a lot of work with Lou Reed, and you still have a connection to Sylvia Reed. Can you tell us your experiences with the Reed family?
Yeah, Waring Abbott called up our office.
Well,
let me start with that.
You have to tell the people who Waring Abbott is.
Well, that's what I was going to do. You stopped me. I was going to tell her that. Waring Abbott calls up the office, and Waring did the front cover for a New York album. Okay, so he calls up the office, and I'm on the phone, and he says, "Lou needs a portfolio," just like that. And we had a close relationship with Waring at the time. I gave him work, and he calls up about this. So the next thing I know, the portfolio goes down there. The next thing I know, Sylvia walks in our office, Sylvia Reed. And that's where this starts, with a great creative combination of three designers working on a project. And, you know, we didn't know where Sylvia was coming from. And that's the other thing. I mean, we're going blind here. And so you don't know, and she's the art director, right? So then you got to think, what is going to go on with her chemistry? Well, it's the best chemistry we ever had. And Sylvia was a great designer. She was nominated before a John Cale package with Lou, a Grammy nomination. So she was there, you know what I mean, and creative. So we ended up designing New York album, Magic and Loss, and we also were involved with two things with the Velvet. The 1993 tour and the box set by PolyGram, the box set, which is a classic. That's sold out every year. That's an amazing package for the box set. So we're involved with a number of things, and they all went through Lou. Lou liked everything. I mean, never changed anything. How do you like that one? Nothing was ever changed. Everything went through. It was the greatest, and Sylvia and Judith and I were like the greatest combination of designers. And if you look at the covers, what we did, they're really beautiful packages. And those are in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame archives, along with the Joan Jett covers we mentioned also before. They're in the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame archives also. So, I mean, it was really good graphics, and we enjoyed it. And it was a smooth ride. I mean, there was nothing, it was a very smooth ride in the design.
The
Lou Reed book cover. That, yeah. Wow, that's a beautiful book cover. That was for the lyrics of Lou Reed. That was put out by Hyperion Publishing. It was a bronze and black combo. The front cover, Matt Mulharan did a profile shot of Lou, which is a very dark shot. It's a very mood shot. And then we high laminated the type on top of it. So it's like a high lam with a matte finish cover. And the front cover is hot, a very hot front cover. And that was written, and by the way, that was written about in Anthony DeCurtis's book, Lou Reed Alive. He actually wrote about that cover, which is unusual. I mean, the author, he's writing about how great that cover was in his book. How do you like that? And that's also, that's interesting. Anthony DeCurtis mentions me and Judith in his Lou Reed book. It's a beautiful book. It's called Lou Reed Alive. It's probably the best bio on Lou ever. And Anthony DeCurtis, if you don't know him, wrote very famous books, you know, in rock. And by the way, he was one of the few people that Lou Reed would want to talk with. He was very particular, Lou, about who he talked with. There were only a few people, and Anthony was one of those people. And he interviewed Judith and I in my apartment, and some of those things are in the book. He mentions us. So that was a big deal, too, you know, part of a book thing with Anthony.
One thing, Spencer, that I did want to mention was it was about 3 years ago now, but you had a display, actually, in the New York Public Library, which was for Lou Reed. And because you had done the covers, you were highlighted there as well. So maybe you both want to talk about
big future, you want to get into that
at
one?
The New York Library.
That was the... the library at Lincoln Center.
You're right.
They had a special show. Spencer, you know, I can't remember the name of it.
It's a Lou Reed NYPL, and it's a Lou Reed archive collection, and that is controlled by Lori Anderson, and that show is just...
Lori Anderson, his wife.
His wife, right. And pieces that were in the show are from the estate of Lou Reed, and so it's very particular what is in the show. But our album covers are displayed.
We had two
album covers.
Two
but,
of our covers.
Yeah, and it's a really, really good show. It lasted for a number of months, right, Judith? Like about
it was a special dedication. In fact, they were, you know, if you happened to be there, if you signed up for a library card, it was a special edition with Lou's picture on the library card, which probably
today is
collector's.
That's right,
a
limited
collector's
edition. That's it, a limited library card. If you have that, it's worth whatever.
Yeah.
But, right?
Yeah.
Right, Judith?
Yeah.
Wow. Well, it was a wonderful exhibit because I actually went to that. We have a caller on line 4, Mark from Texas. Hello, Mark.
Oh, Mark Procht. Mark, how are you?
Hey, I'm doing good. Good.
Well, we want to talk about Mark Procht because Mark Procht was the manager of the fabulous Thunderbirds when we worked on Tough Enough, which turned out to be a multi-platinum album. And I got to tell you, that's a story and a half. Right, Mark? Mm-hmm. I mean, that cover.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, and that great cover and a great group and a great album, and you did a great job. And that album went out the window amazing. And the thing about that cover is that Jimmy Vaughn showed us this square image of a sculpture by Dan Youngblood, right? And so I remember he called me up and he says, I'm going to a CBS meeting, what should I tell him? And I said, well, tell him, and I never did this before with any artist. I said, Jimmy, tell him that's the cover. Like, I didn't tell him to ask him or, you know, what do they think of it? I told him to tell him that's the cover. So I get a call from the A&R person a couple hours later saying, Spencer, you're going to get fired. He said, you're going to get fired. That's the last thing. And so I said, you know what? Because I couldn't see, Mark, a photograph of the group on the front cover like they want. You know, that typical thing, the first album, CBS International, picture of the group. It's not going to be an Annie Leibovitz photograph, by the way. You know, it's not going to be a great photograph. So
Spencer and I both, we were both very determined for that image to be the cover.
Yeah, it's like,
so it was like, we don't care.
Yeah.
That's going to be the cover, no matter
yeah,
what.
Yeah, it's like when you're moralistically into something and you could read the vibe of this artwork and it says this is the cover, you go with it. That's what I believe. You know, Judith and
right.
I believe that. And mm-hmm. just like Judith's saying, so anyway, I got a call after that. I got a call a couple hours later, Mark, from Pat Clifford. So he called me up and he
correct.
Said, it's the cover. He says, that's the cover, right, Mark? And I'll never forget that, but it's great. Thank you for calling in, and you did a great job with that group.
That was fun, yeah. No, it was a challenge, that's for sure. But all those pieces came together back then, and it was not very typical because, as you know, in the mid-'80s, there was one way to do things, and it was kind of the label way. And we kind of bucked the trend, and, you know, you and Judith coming on board and doing the artwork, and that piece of work by Danny Youngblood was just, it just said, this is our album cover. All the band members and I, we all said, this is just amazing. It just kind of fell in our lap. And you can't.
I figured the band really liked it. The other politics, you know, Mark, is whether the record company would buy it because the thing was that the album was the first album on CBS International, and they were going to, you know this, Mark, they were going to get into, a photograph in the front. But I said to them, you know, Justin, I said, what's the big deal? You put the picture of the band on the back. You got all the song titles there. You know, they flip it over anyway. So what's the big deal of doing it? Of course, that's a big thing now, by the way, for many years, is artwork on the front cover. You know, right, Mark? But in those days, it was more
political. We were revolutionary.
Yeah, revolutionary, right.
For a blues band from Texas, you were way ahead of the times, that's for sure.
Yeah,
you were handling a group called Archangel. I just got the package. It's great. That great group.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Tell us about Archangel.
Well, the Archangels came together after Steve Ray Vaughan passed away. That was kind of formed out of after Stevie's death, but it was ultimately his rhythm section of Chris Layton and Tommy Shannon, and at the same time, Doyle Bramhall and Charlie Sexton, who are both exceptional players, were both in their early 20s, and I was managing Doyle Bramhall. And we were all at this place called the Austin Rehearsal Complex. And Charlie had just come back from California. And Chris and Tommy were kind of lost because, of course, of Stevie Ray's passing. And Doyle was there. We were cutting some demos for Geffen Records. And just the band all got together, started to jam around, and kind of found a gig for them at another venue. And it just kind of blossomed from there. And Geffen came down, was just, you know, blown away by it, and signed the band immediately. And unfortunately, we only put out one studio record. There was a lot of, it was very very tough time for the band at that, you know, at that time. And but it's a great band, great players, obviously some of the best players from Texas for sure.
Yeah, and I want to also say that I read an article. I think I talked to you on the phone about this, Mark, and you agreed. Eric Clapton called. They asked him, it was for TV Guide, I remember, and they asked him, what is his favorite musician? And he said Jimmy Vaughn, right? He said Jimmy Vaughn was his favorite musician. I don't think people know that. I mean, you know what I mean? Can you imagine Eric Clapton saying that? His favorite musician is Jimmy Vaughn. Jimmy Vaughn was amazing, right?
Yeah, well, yeah, and well, Eric was great, and he really helped Jimmy along after, of course, his brother passed, and Jimmy was kind of, you know, again, trying to define a career and all, and Eric invited him. One of the first things we did was go to London for Eric's Royal Albert Hall shows. We spent a couple of weeks there. That at that point, it was just, it was the blues shows, but it was first time Jimmy really came out and started playing, and it helped him get his confidence back. And ultimately go in the studio and record a record and, you know, find his way into a solo career, for sure.
Wow. Yeah. Amazing.
Amazing.
Yeah. You know, it's like the Fabulous Thunderbirds were a very unique group. They had a unique sound and, you know, amazing. It was amazing that it worked out that way. I'm so glad it worked out that way, you know, Mark. It worked out really good.
You two were part of a story, a bigger story that just, we broke so many barriers that that whole story of making that record and the success of that record is a book or a movie in itself. And you two are a part of that. You know, people say hard work makes good luck. And there was nothing that just happened by chance. It was just a lot of hard work. And believe in yourself. Yeah. No one expected that record to sell, and I hate to be honest with you, but even CBS Records didn't expect it to sell.
I was going to ask you about that one. Did they believe in the? You know what I mean? I'm glad you mentioned that because they probably
not in a corporate way. There were some people in the company when they heard the record, like Bowen Patrick Clifford heard that record. He was floored by it. He was knocked out and, you know, brought up into the company.
Right.
But it was certainly questionable why a blues band that really hadn't had any previous success was getting signed to a label. And they already had a blues kind of band in Steve Ray Vaughan at Epic. So it was certainly challenging. But, again, we had some key players within the company that – once they heard the record, they stood behind it, and we worked really hard. I mean, as a band, we turned nothing down. We did every bit of promotion that we could do and just kept on touring and touring and touring, going to radio stations. And it was, there's no doubt about it, it had an exceptional, you know, song and Tough Enough and a second single and Wrap It Up. And we made, you know, we were fortunate enough to make a couple of really great videos at the time. MTV was a big part of that. And the pieces just came into place. But, yeah, we opened up a lot of doors still for and again, today I actually had a conversation with somebody about this fact that Stevie Ray and the Thunderbirds helped so many artists, if you look back, who are now playing, find the blues much more either commercial or acceptable because we couldn't get arrested back then. You know, bands that were playing the blues just couldn't get arrested. So it was a challenge.
So, yeah. Spencer, maybe Mark can stay on the line, but we have Teresa from New York on line 3. I don't know if she has a question for Mark or for the two of you. So we'll see what she has to say. Hello, Teresa.
Hey, hi there. Thank you for bringing me in. Well, there's so much to ask about, and I don't know if you've talked about the Fear of Music album. Did I miss something?
No, you're the lead-in for that, Teresa, the Fear of Music album. You're the lead-in.
Okay, excellent. So were there any, design elements that you deliberately avoided or you leaned into when you're working on this album?
No, let me tell you the story. I should tell you the story. Jerry Harris, each album that Talking Heads did would have one of their members do with the concept. So this time it was Jerry Harrison of the group, and I worked with him, fortunately, on the album. And Jerry saw this deck plate floor at Tina Weymouth's brother, who's an architect, on the floor, this deck plate design. And he said, well, that's the cover. And then that idea of a deck plate went to different areas, but they couldn't print it in certain areas. They wanted it in rubber. They wanted it in regular vinyl. It was unreal. Anyway, so they finally do it on a matte finish embossed deck plate board. And then I was involved with typography with David Byrne. And so I both of us picked out a typewriter type. And this is what's interesting. I went to this typewriter place, and these all these women are typing Talking Heads' Spirit Music in different typewriter type. And we picked one of those, and then I tie it together. I actually tied it together because you have Talking Heads on the top, then I put a rule, and then I have Fear of Music, and then I tie it with a border, which makes the whole thing hold. And then I also had the idea of Dayglow Green type. So you're getting this very simplistic cover with a full deck plate design front to back, no barcode. That's the other thing, no barcode in the back. So it's a complete piece of art. Like, and then you get a simple one line of green type in the back, and in the front you just get the title at the top, and that's it. And that came to be a very, very amazing, easy. It was easy to put together. The elements were simple, and it's like what you wanted. That's what you want to happen, and it happened that way. Fortunately, there was no arguing about anything. Everything flowed. You know
what was the date? What was the date? What was that album?
1979. It was nominated.
79.
So it's nominated for Grammy of Best Packaging in 1979, which is an honor.
79, 80.
Yes, 1979. So I've got the certificate on my wall, actually. But I
remember this embossed feeling at that era. The embossed, they're making floor mats, you know, for different industrial interior design in Soho here in New York. I remember that. Now let me just expand on that. Go ahead. Sorry to interrupt.
Yeah. No. You bring up something interesting. You said industrial. Peter Saville, who's a very famous album cover designer, that album cover is in a book called 100 Best Album Covers by Storm Thorgerson, amazing book. And he writes about the makeup of the cover. And then, but Peter Saville, who's a very famous designer, album designer, said that it was called, he called it in quotes, industria cover. Industrial.
Exactly.
Cover,
okay, so our perceptions are right on. It's very handsome. You know, I mean that in a very, elegant, handsome. And it reflects the time. I mean, it's completely spot on with that era. Now, I want to reflect on Talking Heads' Take Me to the River. And, the you know, there's such a difference between the two design elements. Can you speak to that?
Take Me to the River was a 45 sleeve. And that was shown in a, by the way, that was shown in a MoMA show that Laurie Anson co-curated. Years ago, but I don't remember what year, but that was in a show, and that 45 is interesting. It's a very famous 45 design, but we used the photograph green, Al Green photograph.
I'm looking at it right here.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and so it's like that photograph was given to me. I did the typography totally on that, and then I also put on this is interesting, on the front cover and the bottom, you see these waves. And
yeah,
that was
just, I'm looking at them right now. Take me to the river, the river.
Well, in the old days, you had a thing called Letraset. You pressed on Letraset. Remember that?
I remember.
Letraset? So those waves, I pressed them on the bottom. And basically, the beautiful 45 was in a MoMA show. And Fear of Music's in the MoMA permanent collection. That's the other thing.
Excellent.
It's also the MoMA
What's interesting is it's Take Me to the River, and then you have Full Gospel Tabernacle. So it could be about baptism. However, you know, you have a lot of different signals happening here on this cover. So we have Talking Heads, then the river, then we have a spiritual element. We don't know exactly what they're referring to. And then we have the waves down here. And the river, the movement, the waves, the flow, the transition, transition of life. So, there's a lot of information there. Very
I'm glad you brought that up, Teresa, because that's one of...
You're welcome.
One of our favorite album covers that were done. Great graphics, really great graphics. The other, I wish you could mention about Marshall Crenshaw. That's a beautiful color photograph. I think if you're looking at Teresa, that won an award. Annie Leibovitz voted it in, the famous Annie Leibovitz cover into a show. It was that's the first cover that Judith and I worked on, and it's a spectacular, right, Judith? That's a beautiful cover, the color.
Yeah.
Marshall Crenshaw. That
wonderful. Congratulations, yeah. Judith and Spencer.
Yeah, no, we're
right.
Proud of that one, too. That was fun.
How could you not be? It's just great. Now, can I expand a little bit more?
So, yes, expand. Go ahead.
Lou Reed. So what I'm thinking about is that we have these covers. We're looking at Talking Heads. Now, when we go to Lou Reed, we have more figurative album covers. When
right.
do you choose to use the figure?
Waring Abbott shot New York, and that was a concept coming off of a early 1930s photograph of people in an alley, a group of people, and so
right.
what Lou was converted that will be all of him in a group dressed that way, and then the other Magic and Loss is gorgeous by Louis Jamais in Paris. That he did himself. Mm. That's a beautiful image of Lou, Magic and Loss, the front cover.
Magic
and that was
and
given
Loss.
To
right.
us. Those were given, those, like Waring gave me the New York group shot, and then I did the typography, and then Magic and Loss, Judith and I did the, got that photograph, and we did it on that album. And so those are two really
did
good
you...
pieces,
Excuse me to interrupt. Did you alter the photograph on Magic and Loss?
No.
I mean, is this the...
No, Magic and Loss was done... Actually, the whole... No, that's interesting you brought that up. Louis Jamais,
yes.
I don't know how he did it. He did the whole thing.
Okay.
He composed... No, that's a good question.
Right.
He composed that whole thing. He put the whole thing together.
Right. Probably a dark room. They were probably working in the dark room. Maybe,
yeah.
I'm just speculating. Because
you're right.
Very collage-y. A lot of texture, and he was probably dodging, if I remember that he said dodge the light. Okay, so those are my observations. So we're
those
doing
are
like
great observations.
Abstract.
Absolutely.
Okay,
fantastic.
Thank you very much, Spencer.
Yeah.
So I'm going to hand it over
nice
to the next person. Oh, you're very welcome. I'm happy to be here. I just came from another art reception, and I had my alarm on my phone twice, so I would not forget, because I could be easily distracted by all this.
Thank you,
beautiful
Teresa. That's a great input. Great input.
Thank
Teresa's
you,
a painter.
Spencer and Judith. Thank you very much. And thank you, Judith.
Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Okay.
Thanks,
I'm going to say goodbye, but I'm going to keep listening.
Okay, great. Great, Teresa. Nice talking.
You're very welcome. Do you have anyone else ready to chat?
Spencer. So, Spencer, do we still have Mark on the line? Because Mark was... in the middle of telling you a story when we added Teresa. So is Mark still with us?
Yeah, I'm still here.
Good.
Go ahead.
So you guys can,
go ahead.
Still here.
You can continue your Thunderbirds.
No. We're just talking about how basically ahead of the times you were. And I got to say, and I know this is about Spencer and Judith, it was just a great opportunity that we did get introduced and getting to work with the two of them. Was just we created a classic album cover, and it still is. And I've been involved in a lot of record making and a lot of album designs for bands as a manager, and this is probably still my favorite album. It was
Oh wow, that's great.
Well,
Mark.
We love it so much. I mean,
we love it.
I have a question for you, Mark. I have a question. Does that art actually exist somewhere?
I have the original piece of Danny
Youngblood.
Oh,
you do?
Oh,
wow.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
By the way, do you have a contact with Dan Youngblood? Do you have a contact with him?
Well, I can't tell you that I have no idea where he is. We lost touch with him And it's, you know, time goes so fast, so it's got to be at least 25, 30 years.
No idea.
And let me, you know, and one other thing about the, you see, the back is in its own way as unique as the front, which was great. Because I remember working with you two and how to tie it in and the pieces on the back. And I think it was a local photographer took, we did use four pictures on the back of the band.
Right.
And it just all worked so well. Now, again, when vinyl was the number one piece, it was great because you could design an album cover as a piece of art. You know, later on, when vinyl went away and CDs kind of took their place, the whole uniqueness of art design became so limited. So I'm, you know, I'm very thankful that I got to work at a time when vinyl was the primary piece, and you had this room to actually let like the two of you create a piece of art, and you did. It's great.
I'm so grateful that Spencer and I were able to, that we were around while we could still design, you know, 12 inches LP covers.
You know what? Vinyl is back now, Mark. Big time. Vinyl is back big time. With the Making Vinyl event we got involved with, and we judge it, and vinyl is unbelievable right now. The design is outrageous. It's like the old 70s die-cut stuff and everything. But I want to also mention that Fabulous Thunderbirds cover is in the Rock Hall Archives collection also, by the way. I don't know if you know that, Mark. That's in the collection with our work.
Oh, that's great.
So that's a big thing. That's a big thing.
Right, right.
Anyway.
No, it was, you know, like I said, it was a great opportunity, and we just, you know, again, that whole, it's just funny how that whole album came together, and that part of it, too, I'm going to have to go back and look at it someday and go, because I should have pulled it out and said, oh, yeah.
How big is the original piece of art?
No, it's not much bigger than that than the album cover. Maybe
really?
A tad bigger. Yeah, yeah.
I had the transparency. Jimmy gave me the transparency. That's
right.
What it works, but, yeah.
And I think it was random that Danny sent that. It ended up in Jimmy's hands, and I talked to drummer Fran Christina last week, trying to remember how that actually. You know how that happened. It's unfortunate, you know, 30, 40 years pass by, and you try to put the pieces together, and...
Oh, my God.
It's hard.
Has it been that many years?
Wow.
That's kind of scary.
Okay. Yeah, it is. when you actually say the number.
Right. And I think, I don't know how Danny Youngblood just... sent that to, I think it went to my office. Somehow, he just liked the band and was a fan of them. And,
really?
I probably never had any idea, of course, in his own mind, that was going to be an album cover. And then be an album cover that was so successful.
Yeah.
That sold a few million copies.
And such a great image, too. It's not like, you know what I mean, like fans send pictures and sometimes they're like, you know, this is like a great piece of art. You know what I mean? It's like, you know what I'm saying?
Right, right.
And
it's a fine band in so many ways.
Yeah. It did. That's why when we looked at it, more realistically, we could have chucked the album, I don't want to say in a bad way, but we didn't want to work with a photograph and just, you know, front cover photograph of the group. You know what I'm saying? It was going to be boring.
Right.
You know what
I mean?
Oh, absolutely.
You know, look what happened. It turned out to be the best piece in the world. And Pat was really visionary, too, because he probably pushed the envelope, too, on that, I bet.
Yeah, and that was the whole point about everything. We pushed the envelope on everything that we did on that record, you know, because it was just so untypical of, you know, we weren't an artsy band. And again, not take nothing away from obviously a lot of projects that you've worked on. That certainly were defined by the art itself. And it just, that was so far from what was expected from a band like the Fabulous Thunderbirds. And like you said, everybody would have normally said, oh, let's just you know, plaster four pictures of the band members on the cover somewhere. And we didn't do that. And, you know, ended up with such a unique piece of art. It's great.
Yeah, it just turned out to be a really great cover. I mean, we're one of our favorites, you know what I'm saying? And then I took pieces of the, I remember I took pieces of that into the back cover, so it kind of like continuity thing surrounding the pictures and then the titles, you know, and it worked out really great. I mean, just, wow, it was a lot of fun to work on. That's what it was. It was fun.
No, that's what I was saying.
It was a fun thing to work on, you know?
Right.
So we only have 2 or 3 minutes of the show left. So,
I'm going back. I wish we had made a poster of that piece. That would have been a gorgeous poster.
Did they do a poster of that? They must have done a poster.
Did they?
I'm guessing, you know what? I remember the rap. There's got to be some, you know, what they call PLP of the time, for the record stores and all. I do remember going, the band and I were in a rec car going down Sunset in Hollywood, and we went by the Tower Records, and I don't know if you remember this, when the Tower Records would put an album, the album cover on the side of the store.
Yeah.
And I have some pictures of that because we stopped the car, and we all got out, and you know, all the band members, and we were like, oh, man, you know, There's the record on the side of
Tower
Records.
Wow.
That's
hot. Oh,
God.
Wow. Yeah.
Wow. And so, Spencer, we have about a minute of the show left. So how would you and Judith like to wrap the show up as we exit our hour?
We really want to thank you for having us on, because this is the first time we've been on many interviews, but this is the first time we had a call in, and you've always done did a great interview with us before and with me, and I just want to tell you thanks a lot, Kath, and Mark, thanks a lot for calling in, bro.
Thank you, Mark.
Let me wrap it up. It was great talking to both of you, and we'll speak again. Thanks.
Yeah definitely, man. And, I'll stay close.
And thank you.
Thank you. Yeah, we had a lot of nice call-ins. We had Monty Melnick from the Ramones, and Mark, your friend from the Thunderbirds, and Teresa from New York City. And so there's a lot of people out there that have some really good questions for you. So it's been a pleasure to have you on.
Yeah.
Again, please plug your social media so that whoever's listening to the recap can look you up and check you out.
Yeah. And send us the link as usual. And thanks again, Kathy. It was really lovely.
Yeah, Spencer, just plug your social media, please.
Right.
Yeah.
Yeah, we have to have sushi again soon.
Oh, sure. Yeah. So just tell them what your social media is.
You mean our social media? We're
on Facebook. Yeah. I don't know. We're on Facebook. I'm on LinkedIn.
Okay, so it's Spencer Drate in Instagram and Spencer Drate on Facebook and Judith Sullivan on Facebook.
Right.
Yeah.
Right. And
Instagram.
All right, great. Very good. Well, it's been a pleasure to have you on.
Yeah, you can also Google our names and see the vast array of things that we've been involved with. And
we only
talked about a small number.
Exactly. Yeah, very good. Yeah. Well, thank you again for being on the show.
Oh, great.
And you've really made a major contribution to music.
All right, bye, Kat.
All right, thank you.
Rock and roll.
Bye-bye.